If you've ever found blood in the bathroom sink after brushing, you're not alone. One in three people suffer from bleeding gums, and it could be a sign of gum disease. The good news is that Corsodil can help. Corsodil Complete Protection Toothpaste is specially formulated to help stop bleeding gums by enhancing plaque removal. You can find them at your nearest supermarket or high street pharmacy. For more information, visit corsodil.co.uk.
If you could get rid of everything bad about banks and build one from scratch, you'd build a different kind of bank. One that has actual people you can talk to 24/7, not robots, doesn't invest in fossil fuels, charges no extra fees for spending abroad, and definitely doesn't close before you finish work. You'd build tools to help manage bills, teach kids good money habits, and give interest on personal and joint accounts. So what would that look like? Starling Bank, the bank built for you.
You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, February 28th, 2024, and I'm your old pal, Joey O'Brien.
And I'm Troy. My throat hurts. LaValle.
Is the Troy a little bit sick today?
I feel a little shitty, man. I woke up with a sore throat, and usually after 9 cups of coffee, it goes away, but it's still there.
You just burn it out with the acid?
And I forgot to brush my teeth before Cannon Fodder, so it's just a real unpleasant feeling in my mouth.
Something's going around. My daughter is homesick right now. She's right on the other side of this door watching some sort of cartoon at the moment. I said, bother me if you need anything, even if I'm doing a show. Wow. Bother me. So if that happens, Troy, you're gonna have to vamp.
I can vamp. Or we can just cut and edit it up.
Yeah, but I don't like editing video. You know how I feel about that. That's Keep
true.
It raw.
That's true.
Raw. I don't like doing extra work. You know what I mean?
That's fair.
Let me ask you a quick question. I just had a dentist appointment recently, had a situation come up, and I'm curious. I don't drink any coffee. You drink a lot of coffee. Mm-hmm. Does your dentist ever bring up your coffee drinking? Does it have acidic properties that kind of eat away at your teeth? Is that a thing? Because my dentist was like, do you drink a lot of coffee? And I was like, no. And they were like, well, there seems to be some acid-like deterioration in like one of your molars or whatever. I was like, I drink 2 bottles of wine every morning. Like, is that weird?
Is that acidic?
No, but coffee. Does that ever come up with your dentist?
No. Teeth are so weird, man. It's like geneticus. That sounds like a cool name for like.
I'm writing that down for a potential character name.
Sir, I am geneticus.
Geneticus.
I love Flaming it. Sphere. No, it's like geneticus. I can't fucking say it. Genetics. I have like very strong teeth, and I brush. I'm very good at brushing twice a day. If anything, I brush too hard. So over time, I started to wear away the enamel on some of my top teeth, and I had to get like fillings to fill in the spaces that I wore away. But no, I have to do whitening every once in a while just so I don't have brown fucking teeth. But I drink a lot of iced coffee, which is through a straw for like my midday coffee. And so that cuts down. But in the morning, it's tricky. You're just washing your teeth with brown. Every time I brush my 19 kids' teeth, I'm like, look at these beautiful white teeth. It's so nice to have white teeth.
So I think you would have been surprised. This past weekend, I went out to a nice dinner with my sisters, actually. There was
nice.
A celebration, special
Thanks
occasion.
Thanks for the invite.
And so we went – me and my 2 sisters and Troy went out to dinner on Saturday night. So on Saturday night, we went out. We had a nice meal, and we were planning on hanging out afterwards, going out afterwards. Toward the end of the meal – and it was sushi. So like, I wasn't feeling like bloated, tired, but I was feeling like a little run down from the day. And I was like, we got to go out after this and have some drinks. Like, I kind of want to, I need a little boost. And, I was like, you know what? I want to do something I never do that. Like, I don't know if you guys do it on occasion when we go out, you know, for GCN stuff, GCN hangs, but I got an espresso.
Dude, I knew you were going to say it.
I never get an espresso.
We do that all the time when we go to like a nice restaurant. I always get the espresso on the way.
Yeah, I didn't know if you guys got like coffees or cappuccinos or whatever.
But St. Elmo's, it's always like, little espresso, a little Tia Marie on the side, and two more St. Elmo's Cokes.
Two more St. Elmo's Cokes. Anyway, it was really good. It was, yeah. And I left that restaurant like walking on air. It was crazy. I was like, let's go.
And
like,
you don't drink coffee. That's crazy. That's like as concentrated coffee taste as you can get.
Well, it's not that I hate the taste of coffee. It's not that. Like, I don't know. I never got in the habit. That's all it is. And I was like, this is really good. I thought about the espresso martini, but then I was like, I feel like that's just going to, you know, early in the night, I don't know, it's going to just send me down the wrong path. Because I already was feeling a little tipsy. I mean, I already had a couple drinks at dinner, so I went just with the espresso. It was great.
Espresso martini is the new, it's like the new hotness. That's the thing now. Everybody's making their espresso martini. Let me ask you this. I know there's a lot of people listening. What's your poop situation in the morning? You wake up and just poop without having to drink coffee?
I wake up and poop without having to drink coffee. And but it's funny you mention it. It's funny you mention it. The morning after the espresso, it was truly something horrible. We were staying in a hotel, and I was like, I can't do this around anybody that I know. And so I went to like the public toilet in like the lobby of the hotel. Uh-huh. Walk in, it's got three urinals wide open and one stall, dress shoes sitting in. I was like, God damn it! And like, I really, really had to go. So yeah, it definitely did something to my system. But no, yeah, normally I'm very regular.
Well, you eat regular. You eat a lot of fiber.
I do. I love my fiber. All right, let's do a show here. Let's get back to
I want to talk about your bathroom habits. I want that to be the fun. Next week, let's have some more questions from listener mail about Joe's poop.
Yeah, any questions in the comments on our BMs? All right, let's get into it. We got news today. We got some fun stuff. We're going to talk about the tour. We're going to talk about GCP episode 23 of campaign 2. Got a couple comments on that I want to go into. And mostly, though, we'll do some We Are Stupid on that, which is not a lot, but I want to talk about some fun topics that brought up. Okay. And then, of course, we're going to have a nice juicy listener mail. So let's talk news first. The thing you wanted to talk about first, you said it to me right before we went on air. You were like, I want to talk about the tour. You announced the tour. You announced the cities. The tickets are up. Talk to me about what's going on. Man, St. Paul is flying off the shelves from what I hear. I love it.
What's really flying off the shelves is Austin. But, you know, I wasn't here last week. I was out of town for a couple days, and Sydney stepped in for your old buddy. And I was like, oh, I bet you they didn't really hammer the tour because we did State of the Nation. Then you and I did our like post State of the Nation chat. And then I haven't been on in a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. But we've got now six shows on sale because Toronto obviously has already sold out. But we released a six show Nashville last week. So let's talk about it to make sure you know the tickets are on sale for the first seven cities, although one is already sold out, and we've got the rest of the tickets are going to be coming out sometime in the next couple weeks. Kansas City, Missouri on Thursday, April 25th. When we went to St. Louis last year at the after party, what do you think? 90% of the people been like, you know, I came up from KC. You need to come to KC.
You need to come to KC is what we heard over and over again.
Over and over again, they told all of us. So I said, all right, we'll come to KC. We're coming to KC. You better sell that out or we'll go back to St. Louis because St. Louis sells out.
St. Louis VIP hang was also awesome. Oh. It was one of my favorite ever. Like it was just like a crew. I mean, look, all the Nash people, the VIPs are cool, but this one just had such nice people.
It's that, Midwest, like, man.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. Yeah, it was the Midwest. It was a Midwest thing, I guess.
That's what they do. They're just great. They're very kind, or at least they're good at feigning kind.
Right, Midwest nice.
We're coming to Kansas City on Thursday, April 25th. 2 days later, we're in Austin, Texas. That show might be the hottest seller, I think, right now.
Nice.
Austin, Texas. We haven't been back in Texas. Well, we didn't go to Texas in a while.
Yeah.
And we've only done Dallas before. I think we've done two Dallas shows, so I can't wait to get back to Austin.
And I only did one. So I haven't been to Texas since before COVID.
Oh, shit. Actually, so that reminds me, I think we've done three Dallas shows because we did well anyways. Yeah, you missed the last one. And then in May, Thursday, May 23rd, we're in Vancouver, British Columbia for our second Canadian tour stop this year. That show is selling really well. Obviously Thursday night, I wanted to get Saturday, but come on, Vancouver, we know Seattle and Portland, you guys can make the drive up, spend the night, take Friday off. 2 days later, we're going to be in St. Paul, Minnesota on Saturday, May 25th. Even though we didn't sell it out last year, I'm coming back. And Eric Mona lives in Minnesota now. Maybe we'll get a Mona appearance. And then Thursday, June 20th, we're in Denver. We're in Skid's hometown. Now, listen, I know it's a Thursday, but that show is the slowest selling show of all. People begged us to come back to Denver. And I was like, I think I'll give Denver.
So.
I was like, I think I'll give Denver 2 years. We sold it out, but it was, it was great. Let's do it every 2 years. And they said, yeah, they were pressuring me. I'm like, we'll come back to Denver. We're going to be there. You best sell it out or I'll wait 3 years before we come back. Don't make me do it. It'll hurt Skid's feelings. Sell that show out. And then, of course, Saturday, June 22nd, tickets went on sale last Friday for Nashville. And this is going to be part of a crazy weekend. That's another thing we could talk about, dude. The Nashville retreat.
GCM retreat. Well, I mean, retreat. We can talk about it, but it's sold out.
It's sold out. Number one, Nashville. We have been talking about, I mentioned on the State of the Nash. We talked about it a little bit on the post Nash FOD, and then we released it first to our subscribers on Discord. I know some people were upset about that, but you have to understand, like, when we're doing something big like that, it has to go out immediately to our paying customers, people that we know are going to convert sales for us, because this is a huge risk. We have to make sure that it's out there for our paying customers. By the time we went to put it on regular social media, it completely sold out. So we started a wait list. We're in talks with the hotel right now to release more packages, but this is going to be a fucking weekend, dude. We arrive in Nashville Friday morning. And we'll go over to this resort, and Friday is going to be like board game. We're buying like tons and tons of board games to bring in a U-Haul up from New York. Board game, cocktail party, open bar, past hors d'oeuvres Friday night. Saturday, more gaming, probably more board games and living card games, but obviously we'll get into some more RPGs. Luxury bus comes and picks you up if you are going to Glass Cannon Live. If you got the VIP experience, which you could purchase through the Nashville retreat, luxury bus picks you up, drives you to the show, you hang out with us pre-show, you watch one of the best shows of the year, luxury bus takes you back. There's 19 restaurants in this place and 3 pools, so I'm sure things will get weird late Saturday night. And it was so successful, and we're going to try and do this in other cities. You know, this was kind of like at the top of my list of things that I wanted to do this year, and we're trying to find the right place to do it. I was on the fence about coming back to Nashville because I didn't know. It's like people who live there obviously are going to come, but like we want to entice people to travel out there to sell out a big show like that, and so the retreat was a perfect fit. Who knows? Maybe we can do another one in the fall. Certainly we'll do another one next year, but be on the lookout. If we're able to open up more packages, we'll continue taking names on the wait list. Very, very exciting. Come see Glass Cannon Live.
What's going on with merch? There's some new merch that's hitting the store right in time for Toronto, right?
Yeah, we're going to launch 2 new pieces at Toronto that will be publicly available the Monday after that show. We've got the original OG GCP hat. I'm not wearing it right now, but it looks similar with the GCP and the little neon green and the P. We had them completely recreated. I sent them like the last original hat that I had to the designers, and they like restitched it to match it. And then, of course, the bird shirt, which is...
The bird shirt's actually happening.
And you know, it looked, I have
this. Does it look terrible?
Dude, I have your drawing right here, because I had to like scan it and send it over.
Let me see it. Let me see it.
I have your bird drawing right here. And it, I mean, it looks real shitty, right? It looks comically shitty, but right when you drew it, I was like, that's a merch idea. Even when I said that, I'm like, are people going to buy the shirt? Looks fucking rad. It's black with that image like reversed in white with a little tiny planet die on the top back of the shirt. It's a pretty great shirt. And talk about a conversation starter. Because it's so ridiculous. It looks like an early Nirvana album.
Like what people the go, hell what is the on hell? Your shirt?
What band is that? Well, it's a little known podcast. So anyways, that's gonna drop as well. And there'll hopefully be new merch all year. And we're already talking Gen Con. But, you know, we're also talking about, you know, we had mentioned this before, doing more Strange Aeons. Like, I really want to get through Strange Aeons as fast as humanly possible. I'm editing the shit out of this thing to try and really finish this so that we can do a new Glass Cannon Live experience. Maybe not next year, but the year after. And so I'm thinking about supplementing these tour dates with, like, at least one. I don't want to wed myself. I'd like to do one live Twitch a month. Of Strange Aeons that could be like 3 hours long. and you combine that with a couple shows a month, we'll fly through this. It's also been so long since we played. Like, I just want to play. So I'm kicking around the idea of doing like a Glass Cannon Live tour kickoff live stream before Toronto, just to kind of do a big recap, get everybody back into the flow, get everybody who isn't caught up a chance to like, I don't want to listen to all those shows, listen to my recap, jump into a sexy session, and then just hit the ground running in Toronto, and then maybe before KC and Austin, do another live show, and then we'll finish book four, hopefully before Christmas, and then do a quick book five and six. I don't know. We'll see. That's my plan, is to really just like streamline this so that we can rethink the live show experience.
All right. Last thing is I'm going to be streaming on Friday. New game for those of you that are not up on it. Pacific Drive, I think it's called. Pacific Drive has dropped on PS5. Is it called Pacific Drive? Yes, Pacific Drive. I'm going to stream that on Friday. So Friday at noon, I really wanted to do Helldivers 2. That was so much fun. Thank you for everybody who came out and hung out to watch that. Me and Paula and Mary Lou and Sydney playing Helldivers. We just couldn't get the schedules together today. Sydney's actually on a film shoot this week, and that really kind of killed it. So we're going to try maybe next week to bring back more Helldivers. So I'm trying. Yeah. I'm trying. But in the meantime, I'm going to check out this weird new survival game, which takes place in the Pacific Northwest, where all you have is like a station wagon and you have to figure out how to survive in a post-apocalyptic PNW.
Dude, you're always playing cool games. I saw the logo for that. I'm like, what the fuck is that game? What is going on? Is this like on Steam? You're not doing console, right?
It is PS5. It just came out on PS. Okay. It was on Steam before. And now it just came out on PS5, which is why I'm doing it, because I'm like, I love to play stuff on PS5. So,
dude, speaking of PS5, do you want to talk a little Shadow of the Erd Tree?
Oh, dude. So excited for this. So excited. All right. So Shadow of the Erd Tree, for those that don't know, is the Elden Ring DLC, which is blowing up. What is it, coming out in June?
Coming out in June. Like, it, you know, Elden Ring came out last February. A year later, they announced the DLC, and it's not coming out until June.
So it's going to be massive, apparently.
It's like a whole new game.
Like a whole new game. The largest DLC they've ever released. Anyway, we're really excited. I think we'll probably both be streaming it. It's just going to be great.
Yeah. You know what we should do, dude, is like in May, early May, because that we, you know, you've got to get so far into the game to, or in order to access the DLC. I can't remember where it is, but I'm sure it's like,
is it out there? Do they have the news where you have to be to unlock it?
From the commercial, they've already deduced from the trailer, like where you have to enter. And I can't remember the lore of the game because I mainlined it and then just like erased that part of my memory. But I think like beginning of May, you and I should start brand new characters and get them ready for the DLC and then do like dueling streams of this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it'll be great. It'll be so hot. I think that you can't have too much Elden Ring content on your streaming platform. That'd be fun to do.
It's also just such a goddamn fun game. It's such a great game, not only to play but to stream and to interact and to hang out, and like, it's just really, really fun, and I'm really looking forward to that. So stay tuned. I love the idea of starting a month ahead of time and starting a new Elden Ring stream and just starting to crank through a new story.
And I'm excited to play without having to worry about platinum, you know, because when I play it, I'm like, I can't miss anything, can't do anything that's
irreparable. That's how I always play it, because it's the better way to play it.
So
it's just more fun.
I'm excited to play the Joe way. speaking of the Joe way, actually, this isn't related at all. I just was looking for a segue. One more piece of news, Patreon. So by now, I imagine anyone watching this show knows that we have a new subscription service. We created a brand new white glove subscription service that we launched in September. And obviously with the State of the Niche, we announced that everything we've ever done is now on there. Like 99.9% of everything we've done is on there. So no longer do you have to go anywhere else to find our content. You subscribe, you get access to everything, and it's there. Even stuff that's freely publicly available elsewhere. That never happened on Patreon. The ability to migrate from Patreon to the new service without, you know, having to pay the new prices. The deadline to be able to do that is March 6th. So you've got a little over a week to do that. I sent out a message to everyone that's still active on Patreon. I posted on Patreon just to let people know, if you're holding out, we don't know why you're not making the jump over there. And if there are good reasons, let us know, because help, we can assuage your fears or perhaps explain to you why this is going to be a better transition. A day is going to come when we're not going to be able to post on Patreon anymore. So transition is inevitable. This is March 6th is going to be the last chance to be able to lock in, grandfather in your Patreon price to the new prices. So if you're still subscribing on Patreon and you haven't made the move, check your Patreon email or go there. You'll see the walkthrough length. It's three easy steps, and you really only have to do two of them if you don't use Discord, in order to translate your Patreon membership over to there. If you're an annual subscriber, it counts all of that credit over. It's super, super easy, and you're going to have to do it sooner than later, so you might as well take advantage of the grandfathered in opportunity.
Yeah, it also helps us too, because we are the more people that we get over before, you know, that first week of March, the better it is financially for us. So it is very beneficial to us if you make that transition as soon as possible, because after that, we don't have an exact deadline time, but at a certain point, the Patreon is going to be basically shut down with new content. So it's definitely going to help all of us that if you have a couple seconds to put together to do this, just get it done, get it off your plate, and then it'll be over with. All right. Are you done? I don't want to talk about news anymore. I want to talk about the Glass
podcast. Yeah, I guess I'm done.
I want to talk about playing pretend. All right, let's talk about TCP episode 23. Obviously, opening with the fight against the Centaur woman and her strange sidekick, which we'll talk more about that in the actual We Are Stupid, because that's kind of like the chunky combat part. I do want to skip kind of past that and to the end to this amazing corridor of paintings that really is the thing I was talking about, basically, when I said, like, this happens in all of these mystery RPGs. It's like, no matter what you do, there ends up being a point where it's like, aha, and everything gets kind of dumped out in front of you. Was that this moment to you in terms of, like, as you're preparing and reading this AP, is there a room full of paintings that sort of catches you up on the story if you weren't putting it together already? Or is this something you kind of crafted to draw us into the story a little bit more?
The idea of the room full of paintings is from the AP. They just don't really describe what's in the paintings. They give you – they kind of lead you into like this cursory thing. Maybe painting one is this to painting two, but then they just kind of skip ahead. And so – They tell you this is an opportunity to reveal things. So it's like, all right, let's really lay it out there.
Yeah.
You know, it's so important to, you know, the stuff that you know that you just assume the players will figure out, which obviously you guys aren't figuring out. And so I was like, how do I reveal stuff while still asking a few more questions and, leaving a couple dangling things out there that they're still trying to piece together, but also tie it into all the clues that you've had so far. And I don't know if you guys, we'll see maybe in this week's episode, if you've started to connect some of this stuff to stuff you've already learned, because there's just been so many different things. But, you know, it's a great opportunity to reveal stuff that otherwise, unless you find a journal or you read the adventure path afterwards, you otherwise wouldn't know. I wanted to be really forthcoming with the information you got here.
Yeah, it was great, and a really good moment to lay some of that stuff down. And obviously, you want us to connect it to things we've already learned before. And I mean, that's not going to happen, at least for me. So why don't you speak to the audience for a second? Like, you laid this out in episode 23. What are some of the key takeaways you want the audience to take out of this explanation of the room? What are some of those key elements that you think are important for them to know to really sink their teeth into the plot?
Well, you know, obviously the figure we're looking at, it's pretty clearly Kanipo. And so, you know, you've just been hearing about this ominous figure, Kanipo the Slim, seeing idealized statues, seeing shadows down alleyways. I wanted to really lay it on that this is here is what this person, what this entity may be. And to show their story, having been like kind of created in fully formed, like there was no, it doesn't look like there were, it was like an immaculate conception the way, right, it was formed.
Begotten.
and then to have it, you know, see its life cycle and see that it was like struggling with things and its battle with the elves. And, you know, I wanted to tie it into sort of past Galarian history, and that's all in the AP is sort of its dealings with the elves, and also explain a little bit more about how the transition between worlds and planes work, and how even an entity as powerful as you assume Kanipo to be, didn't just always have this ability, like discovered the ability to come into the material plane and then was trapped and had to spend years coming back out, you know. So, you know, I'm being very careful with my words here because I don't want to say too much, because there's also stuff in those paintings that I know went right over your head that
Well, say it.
I know I'm not going to say it because I want you guys to.
You want it to go over the audience's head? Our head?
I don't want to tell you what it is, and you're sitting right here. But there's certain things that I'm like, you know, I don't think they've realized this. And, we, you know,
I'm completely gone, Troy.
We've recorded other episodes, and I know you've still missed things. And so. Yeah, I don't want to say too much, but everything I wanted to say is in the end of the episode.
Well, I'm sure that there's going to be. Well, just leave it in the comments. Just spoil it in the YouTube comments.
Do that.
Let us know what.
Skid'll read them. Ruin it for Skid.
You'll ruin it for Skid. Don't make him sad. yeah, well, that was a cool dump there and really
cool
fun
dump.
Thing. Cool dump. And a good thing to sink your teeth into, because the. You know, my key takeaways from it are, I love this. I love the other mysteries that it opens up, ironically enough. Things like, what did the elves do to this dude? You know what I mean? It's like, it wasn't clear to me, like, why he embarks on this hatred of elves and killing elves and haunting and murdering elves. And then, like, what is it exactly that he is seeking from these people he's experimenting on, or from the elves? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's very important. Like,
you know,
what's
yeah,
going
you could think
there?
It's like immortality or something like that, or the long life of that elves have or something. But like, he's just taking humans too, and like other races that are not known for their longevity. So yeah, it's just very.
They
very
imprisoned
strange.
Him. They kicked him out of the material plane and imprisoned him in the first world. Like. There's like a revenge there. He's
no, but,
they're
but they
mad.
Did that because he was hunting them down.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
a chicken I mean, in
the
egg
punishment
scenario.
Fit the crime, but like they just made sure. It worse.
Well, yeah, for
but
sure.
But I love the idea that like after millennia,
was it
trying,
basically like solitary? It was basically solitary confinement. Like they put him in solitary confinement. You're going to make a madman that is, you know, going to be dead set on destroying you.
Yeah, and while they're sitting in there, they're just becoming stronger and experimenting with stuff and gaining powers. And I love the idea that they finally break out and get back to Galarian and the elves are gone. It just shows you like how long ago this happened and that it was still around when the elves came back. Like this thing and imagine as a player, you're like, are we going to fight this fucking thing? Like how
right,
are we going
right. to? I mean, it's basically like deity level. You know, yeah. like when you're talking about those kind of time frames, it's like mythic.
Yeah.
In terms of the scope of its story. So I don't know.
It's intense, man.
It is. It is very intense. I wanted to, we'll get into We Are Stupid in a second. We'll talk all about the combat and everything, but I did want to shout out a couple comments that I saw on the YouTube video that I really loved. Nilok Harrow wrote that wanted to say, I love how Skid is role playing the psychic class with the entity taking over when he unleashes his psyche. It's very fun. I love that comment because it's something I've been impressed by early on. I love when someone takes an interpretation of a mechanical class or a mechanical feature of a class and really brings it to life in a way that feels purely narrative. And I think Skid has done an amazing job with that so far. And I'm really curious to see where that goes. I mean, that brings up a favorite, like my favorite scene from this episode and one that my favorite scene from the last five episodes is really that Brother Ramius talking to Buggles and starting to try to draw out from him, like, when did you first hear from this Kula Khan or whatever the name is? I might be butchering it there, but when did he first come to you? Did he protect you from, you know, whatever trauma you were dealing with? and just starting to kind of plumb the depths of what's going on in his psyche is a really cool mystery to unfold within the characters. Because I don't know. I don't want to turn a blind eye to this like sweet little goblin who is like so beaten down and so what's the word I'm looking for? He's so meek, right? Yeah. So made meek by his upbringing. But then every once in a while becomes this like other person. It's frightening to be around. And, you know, it's definitely something you don't want to ignore. So,
yeah, it was a great moment. And I see it being commented on a lot, like that moment between Ramius and Buggles. You've got to find those moments especially in combat heavy episodes, to like have those conversations and mine a little bit of a backstory, especially for characters who, as we've already established, already kind of knew each other before this, but we haven't seen them getting to know each other. Now is where they're getting to know each other. So finding those moments is clutch. And I love this idea. I'm really interested to see if Skid mines this sort of like, you know, you've got this split between Buggles and the Kulua Khan, and Buggles is so meek and powerless and he doesn't gain power until this. I want to see Buggles like start to become powerful in his own right, whether it like being inspired by this voice or just finding it within himself, so that it's not always just back and forth. So that would be an interesting journey.
Yeah, absolutely.
If he survives this trip.
I know. It's so deadly. It's like, what, are we going to fight this thing? Like, we can't fight this thing here. What is going on here? So anyway, we got to find out. More episodes to come on that. At Tyler Comstock on the YouTube video commented, I need the healing scene animated. And it cracked me up because it made me think of the Talitha part where Brother Raby has failed over and over again on the treat wounds and he starts smoking a cigarette just trying to put her back together. And it reminded me, we haven't animated a scene in a while. That's something that we should do. I don't know if you still talk to that the artist that did it before, but that's something we should do one of these days.
Yeah, you know, maybe we should just – I always wanted to do those more often, just like budget constraints. We can't do it. But now we got a little more juice in our coffers. Maybe we could get those going. I love those. I mean, when I look back too at some of those, the Barry Broadfinger one, the hairdressers and prostitutes, like I'll sit – they'll just come up on my YouTube and I'll watch them every single time and laugh and laugh like it's the first time I'm seeing it. We got to find those moments.
Agreed. All right, let's jump into the mechanics of the fight. We are stupid. Let's talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition and how we can get better. Oh no, this is the wrong one. I did this last week too. I said let's go to We Are Stupid, and I played the listener mail drop. I don't know why. I feel like you know, Nick was like working on a We Are Stupid drop. He just hasn't gotten it yet. So I haven't gotten the final one yet. So hopefully one of these days we have it. All right, We Are Stupid. We're gonna go right out of the gate talking about focus points and focus powers. This was brought up in the comments. In fact, Nilok Caro brought it up as well, saying, I don't know if anyone else mentioned in the comments already, but I heard it mentioned a couple of times that focus spells or abilities were a per day resource. They aren't. Yes, we are aware of that. I have to pass this off to Sydney. I think Sydney just might have said something in passing that alluded to that idea. And this is what Professor Eric said. I think it was actually not in episode. I think it was on the FOD. Professor Eric commented that Sydney seemed like she might have been misunderstanding that focus point recovery was not per day and she might be limiting herself. Focus points recharge as part of a 10-minute exploration activity. So I'm going to bring this up here. I have it. Sorry, I'm going to share a screen with you. Boo, 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 boo.
I remember when I first started playing, I was in a very short-lived Agents of Edgewatch campaign, and I played a druid just because I hate druids, and I wanted to like see if I could like them. And I could not wrap my head around focus spells to begin with because it was such a change from first edition. And I think I eventually figured it out, but we didn't play long enough for me to really dig into it. But I remember thinking like, I don't know if I like these.
Well, basically they to me, I think I like them. I think that they bridge an interesting gap between the old school like
memorizing your spells
per day, that kind of thing, and then the like what I would call the D&D 4th edition approach of encounter powers, daily powers, at will powers, right? Mm-hmm. So the at will powers are your standard combat powers that you can use over and over again, your cantrips, that kind of thing. But then this brings in the encounter powers from fourth edition, which I thought was a great idea. It's like mechanically, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Narratively, the encounter power seems a little bit foolish. I think what 2E did was did an interesting job of making it feel a little bit more narrative focused. This is a spell that is innate and generates from you, but in order to use it again, you need 10 minutes to do a refocus activity. And that essentially makes it an encounter power. It's something you can use in an encounter. You're not going to be able to use it a second time unless you have a second focus point. And you'll be able to use it multiple times per day as long as you have enough time to refocus in between.
Right, which you almost always do between encounters.
Yeah. And so I have been loving it in Blood of the Wild. So in Blood of the Wild, I play a character that has a focus pool and it's not part of the base class of that character. I got a focus pool by doing an archetype. So it was cool. And I'm able to use it to use this one power that I can use in an encounter or out of an encounter, but I always have to rest for 10 minutes and refocus to use it again. And I've been really enjoying it because it doesn't limit you to like, is this the time today, like that I could use this or should I be saving it longer? It's nice to know, like, you can use this and you can get it back as long as you have a little bit of time to refocus. So anyway, we threw that up there. It is the refocus power. It requires 10 minutes, to restore your magical connection. And, it just takes, it's an activity that you can do. And this is what Professor Eric says. If Brother Ramius is treating wounds on Buggles, Sydney, Asta should be refocusing because that's taking the same amount of time. And that's what you can do in that time is recharge that focus pool. So
now do you eventually, because I don't play at all, do you eventually get more focus spells and more focus pool points?
Yeah, focus spell. It depends on the class. It depends on the archetype. Focus spells you can unlock new focus spells at higher levels. Focus points, I believe, unlock with some classes. Naturally as the class progresses, but there's also feats you can take to add focus powers or focus points.
Are there feats or abilities that allow you to refocus to gain back more than one focus point?
Yeah. I mean, that's what you get is like if you take a feat that expands your focus pool to two, that would mean a given focus power could be used twice in a that's combat cool. instead of just once. And then, 10 minutes restores 1 point. So you would need 20 minutes to restore both. That's kind really of the cool. idea.
Yeah. All right. I can wrap my head around that. That is.
Yeah. Neat. It's a pretty cool function. So we'll make sure Sydney is up to speed on that. Somebody else in the comments was like, of fodder last week was like, great. Glad to see Sydney getting these updates for the mages. And I'm sure we'll see these changes come into effect 7 weeks from now.
Well, I'll tell you, the funny thing is like last week's episode was, we recorded that early January, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then last week we recorded tomorrow night's episode.
Yeah,
we had some scheduling issues. And so like we're playing catch up a little bit, but this is one of the this might be the closest we've had to like releasing from recording. It was like last Thursday, I think. It'll be a week old.
Yeah. It was really, really tight. So when you guys see tomorrow night's episode, like we just recorded that. but thanks for taking away Sydney's excuses for, her.
That's what I was.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So another interesting thing that Professor Eric brought up is the spinning blade ball. And this is an interesting concept. Its size as a tiny creature. It is a tiny creature. This is something that people should keep in mind. Generally speaking, the default reach for a tiny creature is 0 feet, which means it must be in the same square in order to do a melee or touch attack. The default for large creatures is to have 10 feet of reach. However, there is some discussion on this in the community because some stat blocks list the reach and some don't. And even though we would consider these quote unquote defaults, Professor Eric is like, I think the general consensus is to trust the stat block. It will say reach 0 or reach 10 if it has those things. If it doesn't, then maybe you default to reach 5. Not sure. But it is something to keep in mind. Anytime you're GMing a tiny creature, look a little closer at the stat block and see if its reach is 0 feet. That means it would have to be on the square with with the enemy in order to melee touch or attack it.
I'm looking right now and I It doesn't, I don't see a listed reach.
Right. Now, the primary method of attacking for this creature was the move and strike ability that it had. It explicitly allowed it to attack a creature along its path.
Whirling so it doesn't slice.
Right. It doesn't really matter here with this creature because it would be passing kind of through anyway. But it's
it
just
has a blade attack.
Mind.
It has a blade attack, and that would have to be like a normal reach based attack. So I think if it doesn't say, it should revert to the base for the size, which for tiny would be zero. But so I'm just looking
something
on
to think about.
Interesting.
Yeah, so he says the one action harm spell with a touch range would have required it to stop in Asta's square if it had reach zero. He says, I think this ended up correct, but that size tiny issues are always worth a refresher, in my opinion.
Yeah, and also, like, if it's tiny and has to move into your space, that would provoke an attack of opportunity. It makes it even more difficult for a tiny creature to do anything. So it would behoove the tiny creature to do anything but a melee attack because you're provoking.
Correct. But far fewer creatures have AOs.
Sure.
So hopefully that ends up balancing out. Let's talk about it again, this auger, this small blade ball, because at a certain point we get it down and it has regeneration. Mm-hmm. This is the first time that that I can remember in this campaign that we've dealt with an enemy creature having the dying condition. Is that safe to say?
That is safe to say. You know, as written, they're like, you know, in the core rulebook, when an enemy dies, usually it just dies. But it's up to the GM if you want to engage in the dying rules or keep it alive for questioning. And I pretty much just let them all die because I don't want to roleplay. right. But when you get into regeneration, it's funny because like I was like, oh, regeneration as I'm doing my prep. Sweet. Until we got into the encounter, I was like, I didn't really think about like, how this would affect the dying rules. I didn't make that connection in my head in my prep. So I was like, oh, okay, all right, let's figure this out. This is interesting. Yeah.
So, this is another situation where Professor Eric is, impressed with the players here players and GM, I guess, because we did get it right eventually, but he said, remember, if you're going to have an enemy that drops the dying condition, it moves to before the initiative of the person that put it down.
That's one thing that we forgot. Yeah.
Right. But we did end up getting it right during the episode. We figured that out. He said that's a very easy thing to miss because so often these creatures don't have the dying condition. They just end. Something to think about. So when it goes down and it has its regeneration, right, comes back, it is by the rules, I would think, right, prone. Mm-hmm. Because when you get the dying condition, you go prone, you drop everything in your hands unless you have a certain feat, and it then revives itself and wakes up. But it is prone. This created an interesting conversation you and I had after the fact, which was let's look at the prone condition here. Bring it up. Boop, 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 boom. All right. So from the player core, this is remaster prone. I don't think it really has any changes besides off guard rather than flat footed. But you're lying on the ground. You are off guard and you take a -2 circumstance penalty to attack rolls. The only move actions you can use while you're prone are crawl and stand.
Well, there it is right there.
There is the key right. Sorry, this keeps coming up. There is the key right there. The only move actions you can use while prone are crawl and stand. The conversation that you and I had, it's so funny. You and I can get into these debates going back a long time about flying. Flying always seems to create a bit of a bit of a debate between us. So let's look at flying really quick. So fly has the trait move.
That's it.
The requirements are you have a fly speed. You move through the air up to your fly speed, blah, 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 blah. Do you see anything in here that indicates that if you were prone, you couldn't just launch off into the air in flight?
Well, that's the way I ruled it because I didn't read the specifics of prone. Yeah, because that supersedes it. To me, I'm like, if it hits the ground, I'm just going through like what makes the most sense. It hits the ground, it can fly, it just fucking flies and whirs through the air. But the fact is that where the fly has the move trait and prone says the only move actions you can take while you're prone, i.e. like can take without having to spend another action, are crawl and stand. Evidently, I cannot. I have to
stand up from prone, or like I have to remove the prone condition.
Recenter yourself first, yeah, and then you can set off.
So it has to like start to hover, and then it could go. And that makes total sense. It's one of those like Russian doll nested rules that we just, in the heat of the moment, we miss.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because a lot of people are like, why don't they just stop and edit it out? And like, we could very easily do that. But the reason I don't, and sometimes we do when like the discussions I know aren't going to be super easy, but like the reason we don't, and the same thing happened with the, you know, the resizing of the cloak on the centaur. The reason I leave that in is like, I want that, that to me feels like a home game. We're still, people expect us to be just masters of this game. And I'm sure there are people out there, the Professor Erics of the world, that are masters that are still learning every day. But we're a real gaming group. We're real friends who are learning this game. And I think it's interesting for us from time to time to be like, wait, how the hell does that work? Let's figure it out. And then it's a discussion. And sometimes you get bits out of that. And sometimes it's just, oh, look at those are real people learning how to play this game in real time. And so we could have easily caught that, we missed it, and you know, that's the beauty of cannon fodder, is we learn it after the fact.
Yeah, and also like there's something to be said for, okay, so 2 points on that. One, there's something to be said for our home game, which is a game where a lot of times if it's a big deal, we stop and look up the rule. If we don't feel like it's that big of a deal, we just move on. Yeah. And like, that's just the way we've always played. And we can correct it later if we need to. But ultimately, we want to just keep the action going. And not just because it's a show. It's before we had a show. We just wanted to play the game. And occasionally, you know, we'd look up the rules when we felt we needed to.
Yeah.
The second point, though, is, and I think this comes up in this case, we had no idea we were even remotely getting a rule wrong. You know, like, it's not like somebody was like, do you have to spend an action to get up from prone to start flying? And somebody else was like, the Joe O'Brien was like, nah. Right, you know right. What I mean? Like, we didn't address it. Like, sometimes those just fly under the radar. These ones, no pun intended. Right. These ones really are like, it just totally passed us by in the moment. And I'm glad Professor Eric caught it. Thank you very much for bringing it up, because yeah, it does have a direct mechanical impact, which is it had one less action, which means it didn't have the ability to attack a Talitha, I think it did, and make her bleed. You know what yeah, I mean? So like those things matter in the economy of, in the action economy of the episode. So it did factor in, but ultimately nobody died. It's fine. Speaking of which, all right, this is going to be a good one. I got to bring this up. Unfortunately, we're going to have to shorten listener mail a little bit, but I got to bring this up.
Okay.
The recall knowledge check heard around the world.
Yes.
The natural 20. Mm-hmm. On the honeybees, this is going back a little bit, but you weren't on this episode. So the natural 20 recall knowledge on the honeybees, whatever. I'm sorry, the tooth fairies. I said honeybees.
I was going to say honeybees.
The tooth fairy swarm. You haven't been able to answer for this yet, and I just wanted to bring it up for conversation. It's not really even answer for it. It's just, this is a funny thing, because a lot of people were like, this is messed up. It's a natural 20 where you decided to have a little fun with us,
uh-huh,
and give kind of false information, and it's slightly false information. And actually, there is no literal false information. You just played on our assumptions and led us to believe that the death throes of this creature would be so awful so as to create changes in our tactics in the fight that had us paranoid and playing all out of sorts. And at the end, you were like, ah, you know, gotcha. And I thought it was a really funny joke.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until re-listening that I was like, wait, that was on a natural 20 recall knowledge check. So anyway, speak for yourself.
Listen, I
know. Were you just busy having fun with friends?
I just thought it was fun. You guys were having fun. There's really not much else to discuss. You know, the thing was,
totally.
You were like a death throes? And I'm like, yeah, like a death throes. Something happens when they die. They explode. And
you know,
of taking
they can be
damage,
character killers.
Yeah, they can be. In this case, you just get sick. And I don't know. I just thought it was really funny. It took a mundane encounter and made it a little more tense. But
It certainly changed our tactics. Like, it certainly made us much more paranoid. And then it seemed like it was like a prank, like your GM pranking you.
I don't know. It was just fun. It just added to the sort of chaos. Like, I all of a sudden, I became a fey GM the way I was toying with that.
Yeah.
But I know that I historically don't give a lot of information
or certainly give mixed information on knowledge checks. And I really probably shouldn't do that, especially in 2E where it costs you an action. But like, I just don't think a natural 20 means you know everything. And one of the toughest things is like, what information do you give? You know, when a character has a bunch of different things, just bringing up the Tooth Fairy Swarm, it has, it's weak to area damage 5, cold iron 5, splash damage 5. It has resistances to bludgeoning 2, piercing 5, slashing 5. It has immunities to precision damage, and it has the swarm mind immunity so that like mind affecting effects don't, affect it differently. It has two different abilities, pinch, and then the 3 action pry. If it ends up being able to like be in your space at the start of its turn and can do all 3 actions, it can remove your tooth. And it also has the ability to do this plaque burst thing. So when you roll a natural 20, I'm just telling you the things that are, I don't think I should tell you all of that stuff on a natural 20. Now, maybe no, some GMs
I
do.
I agree with you, but I think that here's what I would do is I would give the clear, there's clearly and obviously the most valuable information. Like the most valuable information is the 3-point difference between slashing resistance and bludgeoning resistance is important to know. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, do not use slashing against it. Try to find something else.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of one other, like starting in the swarm square is horribly deadly. Right. Yeah. Like, and you did say that. So yeah, I mean, I think that what you have a tendency to do with successful recall knowledges is dispense lore. And
I start with the lore.
And then you forget that you were supposed to give mechanical useful things. But we have talked about this on Fodder before because it is a good question you bring up. What do I reveal? You have this huge stat block of shit. It's only going to get worse as the monsters get harder. This is where Professor Eric has mentioned before this kind of move to, and I think in the remaster they address this in the GM core, is this move to player gets a question. Player gets to ask the question of what the information they want. And just stick to that unless you really think that on a natural 20, you're like, they're going to be in real bad shape with this. I can give them one piece that could help save them. Like, you, that could be your prerogative. But if you're looking at it and you're like, there's a lot of things here, I don't really know what's valuable. Like, the ask the question
I think that
is a good idea.
You know, the problem is if they're like, does it have any resistances? And if I say no, all right, whose turn is it now? You know, it's like I say no, then would you roll? I'll give you something. You know, I usually try to give you something, but I like to start with the lore because I feel like it takes me out of the game when it's like, would you roll knowledge? All right, 17. It has resistance slashing 5. I like to get a little bit into the lore because I imagine it focuses on the character having learned this information originally, whether it was a fairy tale that their grandmother told them or a book that they read. You know, I always tie back to stuff that you're learning about the first world to the time you spent in the Quaking Stacks. I'm really trying to get into that. So I start with the lore and then I try to tie that into the mechanics of the game just so that it doesn't become a video game. But in doing that, I definitely don't always give as much information. But people know that I'm a stingy information giver. On a nat 20, I should give you a little bit more. I was just having fun. And you guys had fun, and that's all that matters.
Yeah. No, totally. That is all that matters. And I agree. I guess that we've talked about this before on Fodder. As I'm bringing up on Demiplane for the GM core, I'm seeing we've even put this up here before about general versus unique and all that kind of stuff. The player asking a question. Published adventures often include a piece. Hold on, I can just put this right on screen. Publishing adventures also often include a piece of information characters can discover if they recall knowledge. If a player doesn't need to ask, the perfect question in order to get this knowledge. Mm-hmm. Feel free to feed it to them on any recall knowledge check that hits the DC, often in addition to answering their original question. So that's flat out answering your question, which is if they say, are there any resistances? And you know that there's no information there. You can be like, no, but they do have a weakness to this. And that's all I'm going to give you. You know, as a GM, it's always a balancing act. But the one thing that I'll say, I don't know how recently I've said this on Can of Fodder, but this has been in my belief system in running games for the last decade. And that is, don't fall into the, and I'm telling you this now because I think you're falling into it. Don't fall into the trap that speaking in pure mechanics is playing a video game or taking it out of the narrative. Sometimes the mechanics are the way to translate what your character is seeing that you're not seeing.
For sure.
Really important sometimes to say, like, his AC is 38. I'll just tell you that. And then you know your character is seeing something they cannot hit. They would know that. They would know if they were looking at a fiend that was 18th level that descended down to fight them. Like, you don't have to, you know you have to bargain for your life. You don't have to worry about describing it in any greater detail, because as much as you say it has huge muscles and smoking eyes and a huge axe, like, you also don't want to tell them you can't fight it. But if you simply say its AC is 38 on a recall knowledge, they'll be like, oh, now I see what I'm looking at. You know what I mean? So that's just one example.
I can't imagine me ever saying that, but...
But it's just an example.
Its AC is this, yeah. I'm sure there are people to do it, and that's fun. Yeah, we got to play around with it.
But yeah, I think mechanics can be a good way to translate. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I agree.
To understand what the characters are saying. All right, let's get a quick listener mail in here. And thank you again, Professor Eric, for all that detail. It was fantastic. He also mentions that we figured out that when you're healed to full, your bleed stops. We did figure that out by the end. Clutch. Kate brought that up. So thank you, Kate, for bringing that up. And that is from the Player Core page 409. He points it out, and then he says, Kate called this out correctly later. So thank you,
Kate's
Professor Eric.
Kate's doing her homework.
We appreciate it. Yeah, Kate, doing her homework.
Kate.
I love it. All right, Nick, sing us in. Let's get a question from the Nash, and then get out of here.
It's time to listen to mail. Gotta get your grown-up on it. Time to listen to mail. You gotta cue that fucking it.
All right, we're going to keep it quick today. I'm sorry we ran a little short on time. I've got one from AJ. I've got one from David. You guys are going to be in future weeks, okay? I'm just going to bump it, but you will be in future weeks. Let's go to Dan. Dan from Emu Plains, I think. Emu Plains, New South Wales, Australia.
International edition.
Dan. Of listener mail. Says, hey guys, longtime listener and member of the niche. It's so great seeing Foundry VTT being used for Gatewalkers. Can Troy give any insights into modules he is using alongside the official Gatewalkers premium content? Is there anything that you're using in there?
Oh, interesting. I just logged out, so let me log back in. You know, when we were making the switch and we didn't announce it for months and I was spending time learning it, I was watching videos of people to see, you know, not only how they use it, but like what mods they like. And of course, a lot of those were outdated by the time I was jumping in, but some have been updated, some have changed. And I've learned a lot just in playing, like mods that I was way into to begin with, I no longer use. And then some I probably have active that I'm not even currently using. And some that I need to spend more time with, like the animations. We've started playing around with the animations for conditions. I know I can do more with that and with macros. It's just a matter of, like, you know, kind of prioritizing,
putting in the time,
what we're doing. But just taking a look here, manage modules. So I have automated animations on. I have
animations, man. They are the thing that's really taking this to the next level for me.
JB2A, Jewel, and Ben's animated assets. I don't know which of those I'm using, to be honest, or if I'm using one of them. I think is doing the animated conditions, but there's other stuff that one of those does, or maybe both of those does. Like if you cast fireball, I have an animation that like make a huge fireball. There's so much fucking shit going on while we're playing. I'm not like, oh wait, hold on, let me also get a fireball. But that's something I could, you know, set up macros for and have those be laid out. It just hasn't been like a priority. One that I think is, as a Pathfinder GM, mainly a GM, not really a player, it is like the only must-have module, and you got to buy it. It's the Pathfinder Token Pack Bestiaries. It has every single monster from the Pathfinder Bestiaries, and as new Bestiaries come out, it gets updated on Foundry, and you can just drag that monster.
Oh, it gets updated? You don't have to buy another Bestiary?
As far as I know, you don't have to buy it again. It's just going to be like a forever purchase. We get it for free. But you drag it over, it automatically...
braggart.
I have another mod called called Tokenizer that, you know, allows you to create tokens, the like sort of round thing around the player's things. But once I have that set up, I drag any monster from the bestiary over. Boom. It's a token ready to go. I click on that monster and it links directly, to the bestiary from Pathfinder. That is like such, such a must have. PF2E animation macros. I'm not currently using that. And then there are, the other ones are just kind of, I'm not really using a lot of mods, I guess.
Oh, really? I thought you were using like a light one. I thought you were using Fog of War one or something.
Originally, the plan, well, it's sort of like early iterations of figuring out how we were going to employ Foundry. I was going to be using Fog of War. Not Fog of War in the way we did it on the other VTT, but like a sort of adapted version that also used lighting, because I was just concerned about the way the lighting was working. And so I had to see it in action. And so part of SideQuest Side Sesh was really like getting to just throw it to the wolves and see how it worked. And I realized that the lighting makes it so much easier. I just wanted to set it up to have it work the way that it's currently working. And that took some time so that like you could only see what you saw. But once a player revealed it, you could kind of see a dimmed version of it.
Yeah.
But if there was a creature that you couldn't see, you couldn't see. And so that only I could open the doors because you
that play, happened play. In this episode with the centaur. Like,
oh, it's great.
You opened the door and Sydney was like, oh shit. I was like, what? What do you see? Is that that token for the centaur was so imposing. It created a really fun stress environment that I think mimicked what was happening with the characters, you know?
Yeah. So I was using a lighting mod, early on that now, you don't need anymore. Pathfinder does it all. The Pathfinder sort of system for Foundry. It's incorporated, I think, a lot of those early modules into the base thing of Pathfinder. It really is remarkable. I can't imagine how anyone is playing Pathfinder virtually any other way. It is clearly the best. And I'm not just saying that as a shill. It's really been wonderful. You know, obviously we're not using the character sheets because we use Demiplane, but, if you're using the character sheets, there's so much functionality between, you know, the way that you can put conditions on and have it affect your sheet, the way you can track your hit points and there's a lot of different things that we're not even using, but, if you've got a home game and you're doing it virtually, Foundry's the way to go.
Awesome. And then a real quick thank you in listener mail to Giovanni from Glendale, New York, who wrote in, not with a question, but with suggestions for places to eat in Toronto.
Oh.
So I'm going to have to send that along to you. We will see you there, Giovanni. Thank you so much for the tips.
I heard the Chinese food in Toronto is insane.
Oh, I love Chinese
food. We got to get some dumplings.
Some
General Tso's.
Man, the theme of dumps through this whole episode has been amazing. All right,
let's
get on out of here. AJ from North Carolina, I'm going to come to you later. And David, I really like your get in the trunk question. We'll come to that in another week. I'm sorry we couldn't get to it now, but it's coming. It's coming down the line. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out with us, chilling, and doing a little FOD. Getting your dose of the FOD juice. And it's good to have Troy back. Thank you again to Sydney for jumping in for Troy last week. That was really fun. But it's good to be back with the old school FOD. Hopefully, I mean, we got to talk about this. We might have to be back in studio next week. I don't know. We'll see. We'll talk about it. But see, Troy has checked out. I will see you guys. Thursday night. Then the next episode of Gatewalkers is on YouTube. Friday afternoon, 12 o'clock Eastern. Come by and see me take a little Pacific Drive. A weird new video game. It's going to be awesome. Until then, take it easy, everybody. Have a good one. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Guess who I am?
I don't know.
The Mouth of Sauron.
That's pretty good. But goodbye.
It's time to make your membership official. Become an official member of the NAISH today at jointhenaish.com. That's jointhenaish.com, where you'll get access to exclusive podcasts and live streams you can't find anywhere else. See what everybody's talking about and join the NAISH today at jointhenaish.com.